Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. Today is March 5th, 2024. It is my dad's 69th birthday. Nice. sorry about the silence at the beginning there. I was pulling up my Skype recorder, and it wasn't there. It's literally the thing I use most. And the bottom of my screen was like, nah, you don't need that. You haven't used it in days. Yeah, so that's that, but we're here. We're ready to do this. We've got a full house minus Nate, which is not very close to a full house because 67% is a D. I'm off the rails, folks, but that happens when I'm desperately searching for an app on my computer. That should be there. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games, and your main event is Carmelo Hayes versus Tony D'Angelo. Who would have thought that this guy was going to go into Stand and Deliver as the challenger for the biggest prize in NXT. It doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense, but it does make a lot of sense that Trick and Melo don't need a lot more time in NXT. So Trick, for his part, kind of, he improved so fast and got hot so fast that he went from needs a lot of time in the company to he's too big of a deal to even be NXT champion in a small amount of time. So we'll talk about that. Your main event was Tony D'Angelo versus Carmelo Hayes. It was the fourth longest match on the show, 10 minutes and 33 seconds. Tony D'Angelo wins with Forget About It after the music of Trick Williams plays, even though Trick wasn't there. Carmelo Hayes hired four security guys, and then he said, you know what? You guys all stand in the same place. many, many places to run in here, and there's exactly four sides, and there's exactly four of you. But I want all four of you standing there looking at the ring, mind you, and not at the big ramp that you're on, which is where people could enter from. Not the best look, but what are you going to do? So, of course, when Trick finally did show up, afterwards, Tony wins. I'm not going to call it clean because he did use that distraction, but he wins. And then he says, but I'm a very giving person, so I got a surprise for you. And he plays the music again. And indeed, see, it's so nice. I get to do Finn Balor's voice on 8 years back, and I can do Tony here, especially now that he's a singles guy who matters again. And Trick Williams' music plays. The crowd goes wild, and Trick comes back, destroys Carmelo and any of his masked henchmen who appeared. So we got our Stand and Deliver card like three-fifths full, or maybe half full, depending on how many matches they do. The show made hay, and we got plenty of time to add sizzle to those matches, Bruce.
Yes, I'm Bruce Lee Hazel. You can find me at B_Lee253. And this, I mean, we didn't call the match bell for bell how it was going to go, but we called the ending. We said, oh, Trick's going to interfere somehow. And this, in this case, his music interfered, thanks to Tony D'Angelo. But it was definitely because of Trick that Carmelo Hayes is no longer set to face Ilya Dragunov for the Men's NXT Championship at Stand and Deliver. And somehow we have Tony D'Angelo, which we all penciled in as a Stand and Deliver main event this time, 3 weeks ago, because that's how quickly this came about. It was just in the last 2 weeks, I feel like, that we actually got this match to happen. And from that match, we now have our two big matches for Stand and Deliver. Now, I think the question for SND, and it's something that we just saw with Sting and AEW and Revolution, is will the title match be the one that main events, or because of the stakes involved with this feud and this match, will they have Trick versus Melo actually as the main event? Now, I don't think they'll do that. I think they'll have Ilya versus D'Angelo main event right now at this juncture, which it doesn't scream main event to me, but that title usually makes up for things like that generally. So I think that's the big question between these two matches heading into Stand and Deliver. I know which match I most want to look forward to, which to me makes it the main event. But that aside, this match, it was fine. It was good. I feel like what I've been advocating for with D'Angelo for a long time, which is to use his wrestling background, his amateur wrestling background, and add some more aggressiveness to his moves, came through a little bit in the match here tonight. Those belly-to-bellies he threw to Carmelo Hayes, he really snapped those off and kind of just threw him. And I felt like that was a nice look for him. And while the match wasn't clean, as you said, he at least does have the biggest victory he's had ever in his career, even if you include the title match or the tag team championship matches, because this is his first singles, really, main event feud, but at least it's a match that's got to put him in the biggest show and the biggest match of his career. So for him, it's a good showing. For Hayes, we kind of knew this was coming, and it's the right way to go because they need to end this feud. And Trick just came out hot, and the crowd popped really hard both times for his music. So nothing was lost by him just not coming out with that first pop or with that first the first music playing, I guess, would be the more accurate term. But yeah, I don't think it was one of those main events on TV you're going to just wow yourself with, but it was serviceable. We talked about last week Roxanne Perez being able to transition her style in the ring to being a heel, and we'll talk about her a little more later in the show. But Carmelo Hayes has done that too a bit, and we saw that tonight as well, where he slowed the pace. He worked a body part. He had an Anaconda Vice on for a long time on Tony D'Angelo when they came back from commercial break, I believe it was. So to me, I'll give compliments there. I do think he needs to find a new finisher, just like Roxanne Perez switched to the crossface instead of just using Pop Rocks, or at least putting the crossface on after Pop Rock. Melo going to the top rope and hitting nothing but net. It's good, I know, but as a heel, maybe something a little different would work, unless he, kind of like Macho Man used to do, just really add a little something to the elbow drop or a little something to his nothing but net. So, yeah.
Yeah, I, man, arm bars and submissions trip me up like nothing else. Like you say Anaconda Vice, and I'm like, yeah, that's probably what that was. But like when I'm typing them up, like impact moves, I'll hit them all. But it's the worst when you're trying to do a Zack Sabre Jr. match, because he's literally like making up new moves as he goes along. And even if there's a move he does a lot, he'll call it something like Cremation Lily or something like that. And I'm like, I don't know which one is Cremation Lily, because he does like 15 different things. And he just names them things that he thinks sounds cool. So there you go. That's how I felt about this match too. It was – so Tony gets into a tag team, and all of us notice that he's – really getting better at a pretty rapid rate. But part of that, too, is that Stax could do the heavy lifting as far as grapples and speed and
bumps.
Face in peril eventually. And, yeah, taking bumps. And so Tony could, while he was getting better, still remain that brute that leans on you. Now to see him back in this spot, once again, a babyface singles guy, it's not perfect. And it's not going to be perfect because Ilya's a face too. I don't understand why this brand is having so many issues with faces and heels, but, and where to slot them. And with some of them like Metaphor, who, or Meta 3 tonight, because Jakara just wasn't there. Where are they heels? Like they're annoying, but like everyone likes them, as far as I can tell. So, and no quarter. I don't know. I don't know whose faces and heels, man. I just don't. But at any rate, we do have face versus face there. I think at this point I'd be surprised if Trick and Mello don't go on last. I've said that before and been wrong when they've just said, okay, we really, really have to do our championship match last after years of just saying, okay, Triple H goes on last, no matter if he's got a belt or not. Yeah. But then they got better about putting that championship on last, regardless of how big any other matches would seem. But this is like one of the biggest feuds NXT has ever done. And yep. And every step of it has been very, very strong. They just haven't blown it at all with this thing. So, I mean, if that's not a main event, what is? I guess that's how I feel. But that's that. That is your – yeah, I thought it was a really nice touch, too, that they did the bait and switch with Williams, which makes sense as far as the finish to that match. So the crowd would have rightfully been a little bummed if they heard the music and then didn't get to see the man. So it really was a nice touch that this is where we also got to see the man, as we predicted, but happened in a very ever so slightly different way than we thought. So let's talk. This show was opened with Lexus King talking to us from his car. It was a car that was nice. I don't know cars. I don't care about them. If I've owned a car, I can recognize what it is on the road. If I've never owned it, I got no idea what it is. And he's talking to us, being a good company man, promoting tonight's show, even though he's a hated heel. He's probably the weirdest choice to be in this spot, like the single weirdest choice on paper. He was okay. But a weird way to use him. Your opener was Joe Gacy versus Dijak in the Asylum. Lots of gold to mine there, right? It just so weird. I mean, this, we knew it would have some cool spots, and it had some really cool spots. But as I typed, don't look now, but Dijak's on a winning streak, Bruce.
Oh, my goodness. That's got to be the first winning streak he's had since he came back after the Retribution debacle. And that is shocking because, again, for the longest time, he was just someone who would come in there and lose all of his big feuds. And we would just talk about how he needs to actually win something for us to take him seriously. And, okay, finally, he's winning something. So, but then again, if I remember correctly, when we talked last week, Nate might have been the only one who gave Gacy. I don't remember. I think we were all pretty certain that they would give this victory to Dijak. Now, we were more concerned about, is this okay? I'm not sure. Concerned. I did ask if they would go more cinematic with this, just because of how this feud has played out, and I was kind of hoping they would do that, just because it would break things up and be a little different. But at least this match wasn't kind of the Dean Ambrose Asylum match, right? Which, you know, wasn't very great. This had its moments. You're right, and the table spots, people will pop for that. The duct tape over the eye spots, the straight jacket spots, people are gonna like all those things. So there was a bit of fan service there. Now, to me, what is the story of this match again? Is it just that Gacy likes to take punishment and takes a lot of punishment from Dijak, and Dijak likes to give out punishment? I don't remember how this feud began, and I don't think that's good for either of them, I guess, would be the right.
I unmuted as if I was going to tell you how it started, and then I found nothing coming out of my mouth.
All I remember is, for some reason, Dijak had Gacy in an interrogation room, and then Luca Cristofino was there for some reason. But I don't remember what was the genesis of him having him there at the beginning. So just all around, yeah. We thought that the last week I said, at least I thought, and I think you agreed, that the Kabuki Warriors versus Lyra Valkyrie and Tatum Paxi would be the show opener. That was actually the crossover today, or tonight. I guess this was, in terms of getting the crowd hot, this match did work, because they had those spots, and it did end in an emphatic way. Now, this is what I wanted to bring up about this match. If Nate was able to speak with us tonight, he might bring it up too, and I think he might go the opposite of you and me. I don't mind the fact that Joe Gacy popped right back up from the first Feast Your Eyes. If you watch enough Japanese wrestling at all,
you see
the final fighting spirit spot, right? The Bushido Ray, that just, you try to get it out. And I'm playing 2K24, and one of the showcase matches is Bret Hart, Stone Cold, WrestleMania 13, one of, I hope, everybody's favorite matches of all time. I love that match. And at the very end, Austin pushes himself up and almost gets out of the hold by forcing Hart forward. But Hart reestablishes the hold, and then gets back on and firmly locks into place, right? That's that last bit of fighting spirit. I don't mind that at all, because you know exactly what's going to happen next. He ate another finisher and lost cleanly, or as cleanly as he can in a match like this. So, and I want to say that Nate might have issues with how that played out because of how quickly he popped up. But, again, you watch enough, especially you watch any main event Okada matches over the last decade, you're going to see these spots over and over again, right? So, to me, well, not over and over again, but you'll see him in his matches. So, to me, I think it added a bit of spontaneity to the match and also to what we normally see in WWE, because usually you get a finisher and that's how the match ends, or it's you hit one finisher and it's a dramatic kick out, and then you hit 37 more finishers with each dramatic kick out. This one, I just like how hit the finisher, popped up, hit the finisher right away, match ended. And I want to say that you definitely would agree with me because of that fighting spirit aspect of it.
Yeah, I love that. And Nate, if you didn't, you're so American, man. You're just so American. I've never been out of the country. I'm 46. That is horrible. But it is on the way very soon to being rectified, I think. Okay, let's talk. I don't know. We brought him up, so why don't we talk Kabuki Warriors? Lyra Valkyria and Tatum Paxley versus the Kabuki Warriors. But let's not gloss over Tatum Paxley in the weirdest monologue ever. She wants to reach into some bodies and pull out their souls. Asking people who are normal and are not actors to act crazy is a really, really dangerous thing to do. Because in general, they can't. Like, what's the answer? Go to school for acting for 4 years. That's the answer. This was about what I'd expect from somebody on NXT trying to play crazy. And she's giving it her all. That's great. It's hard to do. But Vic had little recourse afterwards but to say, well, that got awkward. Instead of really selling how wouldn't be the worst sell job by an announcer on this show, shuggy ducky, quack, quack, but which will come later. Oh, boy, I didn't even write down where that – oh, gosh, yes, I will get to it soon. Lyra Valkyria and Tatum Paxley versus the Kabuki Warriors. As with many heels on this show, they got cheered, but this is their old stomping grounds, and it's very, very cool to see them, and they're awesome. So Asuka and Kairi Sane, it's always – I know we said this when the New Day did their run, but for those of us who see a lot of NXT, you get really used to it. You think you're seeing something great, and you're seeing something good, and then somebody on the level of New Day or Asuka and Kairi Sane show up, and they really remind you how good wrestling can get, and what a real, real seasoned worker looks like. I like that Tatum didn't look like she was getting eaten alive in this match. She was fine. If you had to pick a weakest, that's it. But you knew that going in. She's very, very much less seasoned than the others. But it's just such a treat to be able to recap this. Recapping these heavy wrestling shows can be taxing, but recapping an Asuka match is always worth the trouble. Just love, love, love her, and I love how weird Kairi is. There, Tatum. Keep an eye on her, because Kairi does crazy pretty well. Granted, she doesn't have to carry a large load on the stick. So Kabuki Warriors, of course, win this 13 minutes and 14 seconds. And afterwards, Lyra's the last one alone in the ring. Roxanne Perez comes out wearing babyface white, but acting oh so evil, and just essentially broke the arm of Lyra Valkyria. They kind of did like a really nasty looking spot, but very, very easily controlled by a pro, where they just kind of wrecked her arm over the bottom turnbuckle, had her taken out in an ambulance match. I will never see that spot and not say they're doing an ambulance match. Had her taken out in an ambulance, and there you go. So she'll probably sell that off TV for a couple of weeks. But the reason I said we had three matches for Stand and Deliver is because this is going to be a match at Stand and Deliver. Roxy just soaring in a heel role, which I did not predict would happen, because you got to be able to do more on the mic as a heel often, more in a different way. Let's put it that way. It's higher concept often. And she had struggles keeping it in a babyface context. But this girl knows how to be nasty, Bruce.
Yeah, I thought to myself, wow, she's been studying the playbook of NXT Shayna Baszler, looking at that spot there at the end of the post-match. So, to me, this was the biggest fan service match of the night, and I have no issues with that. Just the entrance, the music, their confidence, their characters. Just seeing the Kabuki Warriors back together was a treat to see. I'm going to give credit here to Meels TV, M-E-E-L-Z TV, tweeting about how Asuka's been undefeated on NXT TV for 9 years now. So that's got to be – she's up there with Bruno right now, right? Just making sure nobody beats her. And then Kairi Sane, just the right kind of weird in wrestling and in the ring. And it doesn't take away from any of her offense, any of her believability. Even for someone, you know, people who have a slighter frame usually get critiqued in professional wrestling, especially in WWE. But nothing that she does makes me think that she's too small for how she goes about her matches, how she her offense comes across. I feel like everything that she does is just great. And then Public Enemies tweeted about Shawn Michaels stay horny, and he tweeted that spot. It was that spot where Kairi Sane was patting her butt at Tatum Paxton, and Tatum Paxton kind of, and she leaned back, and then Tatum Paxton kind of crawled toward her, and just everything like that, and especially the camera angle and everything. So if you didn't see it, imagine what you will there. And then I just felt like, not to say that Valkyria and, well, especially Valkyria are not as talented. They do have talent. They're not as experienced or there yet. You just saw some more of that crispness and that quickness in the ring with the Kabuki Warriors tonight. And the one spot I really liked was the Code Breaker into the running blockbuster. Asuka hit the Code Breaker and held I think it was Valkyria there for Kairi Sane to run across and hit the blockbuster. I really liked that spot. And then their finisher, you know, with the inverted DDT insane elbow combo, just everything looks so good, and Kairi Sane's elbow drop is the best in professional wrestling. I love seeing it every single time. And before, how the women's division in NXT is lacking, or not lacking, but how you're starting to see more tag teams come about within NXT for the women's division, right? So you don't have Thea Hale and JT Jane, as we'll get to later, but you have JT Jane and Jasmine Nix. You have what I think is going to
now I don't have to do it a first time. I still might,
you.
But yeah.
Exactly. I also think that eventually with what happened tonight, we're going to have Ariana Grace and Gigi Dolin as a tag team. And then you have Kiana James and Izzy Dame. You're going to have Fallon Henley and probably Thea Hale as a tag team. So we're starting to see more women's tag teams come about. And I wonder if that's going to lead to more either appearances for them on Raw or SmackDown, or more appearances for the Kabuki Warriors on NXT to defend the title. Not every week, but maybe every month or so, you might see another tag team in NXT after they've won a couple of weeks, make a challenge or come and the Kabuki Warriors come back or something like that. I just feel like there are enough tag teams forming within the women's tag team division or the women's division that you have the makings there of what could be a little run for the Kabuki Warriors, kind of like we had with the New Day, although the titles aren't technically NXT right now because the Women's NXT Championship were dissolved, I guess would be the right word. For me personally, I would love to see them more on NXT, but this might just be a one-off to kind of pay off the Pax Lee Bakura storyline. And I wonder if the finish tonight ends up playing a part in, well, probably won't happen until after San Diego, because Roxy just obviously is the next contender. And I have no doubt that she is going to beat Tatum Paxley at San Diego. She's going to emerge as a women's champion and a heel champion this time. And I feel like with how she's doing, like you said, she's just excelling on every single level. She is not trying to straddle the line of being a face or still trying to be flashy. No, she's going out there and she's letting out all her rage and all her anger, rightfully, because, again, I'm going to keep stressing this. She still never had her full singles match for the Women's NXT Championship that she never lost. So I really like how her character is coming across, and that spot tonight is very vicious, and she showed no remorse. If we get an ambulance match, okay. Although for some like stand and deliver, I would like to avoid some of the gimmick matches if possible, just because if it wasn't for the title, then I'd say gimmick match is fine. But since it's for the title, I want to see more of a straight-up singles match.
Let's go to an email. You can email us at pwtorchnxt, not 8YB, at gmail.com. Really wanted to say, I wanted everyone to know why I paused. Yeah, forget that 8YB thing. Kevin Catani says, he normally says the doctor is in. This time he said the doctor is late. This one just dropped in. Salutations, gents. Sorry for the late email. It was my turn to put the girls to bed. Because I'm late, I just want to say hi, along with one question. How long do you think Braun and Baron will stay together now that Braun is officially on SmackDown? Or does this mean Baron could be back on his way up? Thanks, as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Yes, about 8YB. We had a great show last week. Lots of tangents. Like 15 minutes of them before we actually started the show, but it was worthwhile. This coming week, NXT is just one match. That 8 years back, it's 2 out of 3 falls, Sami Zayn versus Samoa Joe, and it's like 43 minutes long. I don't know why I didn't remember this, but that's what it is. That's the whole show. So I don't know what the hell Tom and I are going to talk about when we record tomorrow. Because there's one match. Anyway, on his email, how long do you think they'll stay together? Well, it seems kind of wasteful for them to win. I don't know. I guess I don't get why they won the tournament and then the championships. If they're maybe going to just, and then they just kind of threw out there that they're doing a tag team tournament.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They didn't, like, we weren't primed for this. They're doing one. And it almost sounded to me like he was saying tag team championships. And then I was like, well, that can't be. Then I thought more about it. And I was like, maybe you let the cat out of the bag. Maybe Braun and Baron are going to give up those championships. That's not the way I like things to be. I don't love things to be vacant. But I think it's weird what they've been doing with the tag team championships anyway for a little while, moving them around a little and having Tony D and Stax have 2 title reigns that had almost no defenses in them. It was just very weird. So maybe it will be for the tag team championships. So I don't know. I don't think they'll be there much longer. You can bring Baron back up, and I feel like the best thing for him by far would be to continue doing the thing with Braun. The best thing for Braun, though, would have nothing to do with Baron Corbin. So it's Corbin will probably slot in where he was. That's typically the only 2 options when you go down there to kick the tires for a while, or go up to your old spot, or you're done. Bruce?
So either on last week's show or the week before, there was a similar question about this, I believe. And I said that Stand and Deliver, they'll probably lose the title. I didn't know how they would get there, but now we got this tag team tournament. Don't ask me who the tag team will be, but okay, OTM. I'll just say OTM right now because I'm not even looking at the roster. I'll say OTM. And then at WrestleMania, I made my prediction that Breakker was going to win the Andre, and that during the Andre, he would eliminate Breakker, and that would signal the official breakup of their tag team. I think if you look at what happened on Friday with Braun taking out our boy Big Body Javi with a spear right as the bell rang, that's probably, I feel like they're also thinking that they're not going to have the Wolf Dogs as a team up on Raw and SmackDown. I feel like, especially with Breakker getting time now and matches on SmackDown, he's had, you know, his signing was much valued. He got a whole segment with Nick Aldis, and they're giving him time, squash matches. I feel like if they were going to be a team on SmackDown, that there would have been some reference to their connection already, but I don't think they have. Now, I work on Fridays, so I don't have ability to watch SmackDown, especially with the time difference, and I think this Sunday marks the return of Daylight Saving Time, which means that I definitely won't be able to watch things. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but to me, that means that they are not going to be a team. Now, I also wouldn't be surprised if Baron Corbin actually stays in NXT while Braun Breaker goes to SmackDown, and part of that leads me to, what leads me to believe that is last week in their backstage promo segment, whatever they were talking about, Baron Corbin said, and I know it could be a bit of kayfabe, but you know, this is the most successful he's been in his career. He's first time he's won tag or any kind of gold, and that he's having the most fun of his life in NXT. So to me, that probably means that, okay, not, it doesn't probably mean, but I would predict that that would signal he would stay in NXT. While they definitely have larger plans for Breakker on SmackDown.
All right, since we're talking about Breakker, let's talk about Wolf Dogs versus Chase U. But since we're talking about Chase U, we have to talk about the thing with Thea, which means we have to talk about the thing with Thea and Fallon, which means we have to talk about Fallon and Blair. Okay, so all of this was connected. They're celebrating my dad's 69th birthday. That is what's going on here.
Good for them.
69 is a big, it's a big one. Only turned 69 once, if you're unlucky. Let's move on. Henley and Osborne, we're talking in the kitchen area. That's what I call this, kind of like a little pantry. I don't know.
That's what I think too, yeah.
And Henley's trying to say to Riley Osborne, hey, Thea's still the real Thea. You should hit that, man. It's not what she's but she was thinking it. Blair Davenport shows up and gets all snotty with Fallon Henley and just to be mean, for no reason, apropos of nothing, says she's not even Riley's type. So these two get a match for later. The next match is Chase U versus the Wolf Dogs. Wolf Dogs win this, of course, in 11-18. A little bit of an awkward match because Andre Chase is in there playing Face in Peril, but the audience is cheering for the Wolf Dogs, so it doesn't really work. Wolf Dogs win this one with Spear of Days,
oh,
or,
gosh,
as Vic would call it, Deep Six. So... twice, two chances. Calls it Deep Six as it happens. Then I was like, and I'm almost starting to type it because sometimes I just start taking my cue from what's said. Then I'm like, I think I saw an End of Days. And so he does it a second time, and I'm like, he doesn't do it a second time. They're showing the recap. It's End of Days. And Vic is just, he's committed. He is pot committed. He's calling it the Deep Six. But I can understand. Baron Corbin has only had one finisher his entire career. It's always been the End of Days, and that's what it looks like. And what's worse, they're both really cool moves that don't look similar to one another. Vic, I tells you. Okay. Thea bails after the match because she's mad about something. She goes and fights. Oh, yeah, Izzy Dame and Kiana James are part of this too. We could see like a 14-person tag next week. I think that's what we see. So she gets into a fight with James and Dame in the back. Later on, shows up with Chase U in the back and said, I think we need to have a tag match next week because I really got into some trouble with Kiana James and Izzy Dame. And Jason Jane's like, What tag match? Who are you going to tag with? And she goes, well, you. And she goes, no, sorry. Next week I'm busy. So that's not happening. But Fallon Henley, who will probably be the partner, took on Blair Davenport. Fallon trades wins a lot. She's a bit of a diejack, but she wins this one 3:28 when Sol Ruka shows up and kind of hits her finisher from the barricade to the floor and rolls Blair in for Fallon's finisher, which apparently is a running knee, but we don't see her win a whole lot. So I don't know that I remembered that. So many things, all working in concert. It was a beautiful thing, Bruce. And if you can remember any of it, go ahead and comment.
Is Fallon Henley shining wizard shinier than Tegan Nox's shiniest wizard? I guess that's the question to ask here.
Yeah, obviously.
Yes. The one thing that irked me about this match, and it goes back to something you said earlier, something we've been talking about for a long time with NXT, is when does it work when faces act like heels? Why is Sol Ruka, a face, attacking a heel from behind, causing the heel to lose a match to a face? I get it. There's a reason for Sol Ruka to have attacked Blair Davenport. Blair Davenport attacked her and story and caused her to be injured or tear ACL in story again. And because of that, she was out for however many number of months. Right now, we knew she was coming back after last week's little beach vignette that said coming soon or see you next week, whatever it was. And I'm not sure if this is the best way to reintroduce Sol Ruka. The match was fine. Henley has improved a lot. Blair Davenport, we know what we're going to get from her. Great match, or not great match, but great wrestler to me. I like how these two meshed. I'm just irked by this finish, by Sol Ruka attacking from behind and causing the victory, or causing the loss for Davenport and the victory for Henley, when I feel like that could have been saved for post-match or even the backstage. She could have just reappeared and then all of a sudden do what Roxanne Perez was doing when she first started turning heel and just look at them and then pop her in the mouth. He didn't have to do it this way, but they're all about, you know, trying to protect people even in their losses. Clean wins and losses are fine, okay? Outside of House of Torture and stuff, like just watch some Japan matches and how it's fine to just lose and win, and you can come back from that. You can build stories from that. It's not that hard. And I don't know why so much wrestling in WWE is built around the fact that we need to protect both wrestlers or both teams or however many wrestlers are in the match. People can win. People can lose. That's just how it goes. If you watch any other sport, if you watch any combat sport, sometimes the person you think is better, sometimes the champ, sometimes the better person doesn't win. And that's fine. So I don't know if you can tell, Kelly, but I was really annoyed by how this ending played out.
I picked it up.
Just a little bit.
I did. For me, part of that annoyance is due to the fact that they promoted Sol Ruka's return this week. And she returned not in official capacity, but in an interference capacity in a match that was not booked when this show started. So how did she
return? like for themed show. And I guess I get the fact that it's not an actual PLE, but the fact that it's a theme show, it feels like it should have already, the card should have been finalized, and you shouldn't be adding matches the night of because it's something that happened the night of. I'm a little annoyed, folks, just a little bit.
All right, let's find something less annoying. am I going to find that in a Sean Spears Ridge Holland segment? I don't think I am. Let's save that. Let's go to William Regal.
Oh, okay. I love this segment.
No Quarter Catch Crew, come out. This is late in the show. We think we've seen it all, folks. We think we've gotten all the nice little surprises we're going to see, other than Trick Williams, who we all kind of knew was going to come out. They did indeed. I thought Charlie Dempsey might be annoyed that they all claim to be champions, but he's the one who told us we are all champions. And that got booed because wrestling fans don't like their championship lineages to look ugly. And this makes it look real, real ugly, especially if someone other than Charlie Dempsey loses, which they will, because Damon Kemp will lose this championship. Like, that's how this championship reign is going to end, unless they want to turn Miles Bourne babyface, because he looks like one and works like one. So they could do that. But anyway, Charlie Dempsey did some fairly decent mic work, saying that this championship represents what he wants wrestling to be, the wrestling that he sees in his image. Pretty decent stuff. And then Regal's music starts, and a few people are like right away, and then it just grows and grows and grows as they all realize, oh my God, we haven't heard this in a while. And for me, it took a second because I was like, yeah, big deal. He's on every, well, oh no, that's 8 years back. Because
and for me, it was,
all the time.
That's him and his son about to have their first segment together in WWE.
So the crowd's chanting, that's your father, which great. But I mean, who's your daddy is right there. It's right there. And it has the same number of syllables. But yes, and for WWE's part, they made it. It's like if you know, you know. But if you don't know, they don't have to confirm it. And they can just be cheeky about it. They kind of do the same thing they did with Jerry the King Lawler and Honky Tonk Man. And then again with Jerry the King Lawler and Brian Christopher, where they would have, like, they would talk. So if you knew, the stuff would be very funny. But if you didn't know, it would still be amusing, but you didn't know why they were doing it. But, yeah, they – big, big response for Regal, just huge. Probably the biggest to that point on the show. Just very, very excited to see him. He doesn't look any older or any different. I think he's wearing the same suit. I think he was just back there on ice for 8 years. I know he allegedly appeared on AEW. But, he's back. I don't know. I don't think I expect him to be an on-air presence, but for now, he was here today, and that was awesome. And no Quarter Catch Crew are all champions, Bruce.
Yeah, so to me, this was just one of those segments where if you knew, you knew, and if you don't know, the crowd lets you know why this segment was so significant. And what I just kept laughing because you could see Regal. He wanted to smile and laugh so much, but he tried to stay in character. And he failed miserably, but it was just adorable to see because, you know, he's out there with his son. And his son is he's having a promo back and forth with it. Well, not a full back and forth, but he got to have a little moment with his son there. And I could just imagine how proud he must feel to have that segment with his son there. And just all of it, if you know, like, you know, you and me and Nate and Tom, we've been watching NXT almost from the beginning. And so to think about Regal when he was there, his retirement match with Cesaro, his run as NXT general manager, which was just a fantastic run, all the memes about War Games because of him, just it was just heartwarming to see, I guess, because he's been, you know, this is someone who's dedicated his entire adult life to professional wrestling, and their son has followed him, and they get to just have that nice moment. And again, you get, like you said, they get to be a little cheeky about it. And you wrote in your report, once that is out of the tooth, the tube, you can't put the toothpaste back in, right? So being able to play with that a little more, I do like. And if you notice, the name graphic for Regal said Mr. Regal. It didn't say William Regal. It said Mr. Regal. So they're giving him a little bit of air of authority, even without him being general manager. And I wonder, because he did say, I'll be watching, I wonder if he eventually either starts managing the entire stable or Dempsey peels off and he just manages his son. And we have a father-son duo in terms of manager and competitor within NXT. And that would be awesome to see, I think, especially considering the connection to NXT that Regal does have. This would just be something different than if I'm trying to think of a second or third generation wrestler in NXT right now, and I'm really blanking. But let's say their father came in. Well, they don't have that connection to NXT as much as Regal does. So to me, if that does end up being the plan, it would just be it would be, especially for those of us who have been watching for so long, it would just be a nice moment, a nice thing to happen. And, you know, I think that is something that, depending on Dempsey's development, you could take to our SmackDown as an act together and immediately have legitimacy to that character and to that act because of Regal being there. So to me, all in all, just really great. Love this segment. And, yeah, Damon Kemp has definitely got to be the one to lose it.
All right. So, Spears, we're there, folks. It's the only match left, so we do have to talk about it. They never said who he was going to face, so you knew it would be an enhancement guy. We could have seen Dante Chen here, but they still have big, big plans for the tag team with him and Boa. Obviously, so big that they're just holding them back for months at a time, knowing that they can bring them out in the biggest moment possible. Sean Spears.
Tag team tournament.
Yep. Opponent is Uriah Connors. I had not seen him before. I think that he went to the barber and said, you know what? Give me the Janet Jackson. Just pick an era and I'll go with it. I'll make it work. And so that's what he got. So this match was probably good. It was probably fine. It was 71 seconds long. Sean Spears hit his finisher and then crawled for half an hour over to Uriah Connors and finally covered him and pinned him. Then he called out Ridge Holland, called him a hypocrite for the fact that he's evil and doesn't know it, which, by the way, Spears is right about. That's literally the story they're telling. Holland's evil but doesn't know it. And then Ridge Holland ran to the ring, just destroys Spears, and it's completely one-sided. The crowds are just booing this, even though I think Ridge is the face. I'm not sure. I don't know. Yes, I'm not even. It's the crowd reaction is so bad. I almost want to say maybe he's not supposed to be. But it does look like he is supposed to be. Later on in the show, Sean Spears leaving fashionably early, and they ask him, what's up? And he says next week he wants to take it to Ridge Holland and bring out that rage. So there you go, 71 seconds in heaven.
I will say that at least Sean Spears' C4, his running Death Valley driver, he does put a little snap on it. Does his in-ring ever wow me? No. But as Cody Rhodes said about him before, he's good hand. You could have him in there. And he does. You've seen him so much on 8YB throughout the past couple of years, unfortunately. And there's just not much that wows you when he's in the ring. Now, my question to you is, okay, so before I get to my question, at the end of that beatdown, Spears was just smiling at him, kind of maniacally. And so my question is, what's different between Sean Spears and Joe Gacy?
Ooh, I was going to say I don't mind seeing Joe Gacy, but sometimes I do mind seeing Joe Gacy. Lately it's been better. Oh boy. Do they need two of this character, let alone?
Exactly.
Do they need one, let alone two?
Exactly. So, and if I'm going to have one of these characters, I think Gacy pulls it off better. Now, there are some different nuances to the characters, I guess. Sean Spears is more of the kind of the, methodical, wide-eyed sociopath, whereas Gacy is more of the chaotic sociopath, but I just feel like there are too many similarities that the differences get lost in those similarities. So, the crowd definitely not accepting Holland as a face. I think you're right. He is the face because you don't put that much effort and time into him with those promos, those vignettes, for him to not to waste on a heel I guess, like that. You don't try and I guess the framing of those is not a heel framing, right? Excuse me. I'm just thinking about the crowd reaction earlier with the tag team championship match because Duke Hudson got the hot tag and there was literally no reaction for him. Sorry. Coming back to this, what I'm wondering is if the point for Spears is to draw out the anger and the rage and the evil, as he said, in Holland. And I think evil in pro wrestling sometimes is too amorphous of a concept, and I would like them to be a little more emphatic in what they mean by evil with how the actions play out later with Holland. If you wasted those vignettes and you have Spears and then he comes back, is it really just to be, because it sounds like it's just going to be fodder for Ridge Holland, and I'm not sure if you spend all, there's just a lot of confusing things about this feud, and it's not necessarily one that I'm looking forward to watching, but it's one I'm looking forward to ending. So, yeah.
Okay. The rest of the show was segments. The family, they added Luca Crucifino because he was the only Italian guy who wasn't in their group, so might as well add him. They essentially did a scene out of The Godfather. If you've seen The Godfather, you know what I'm talking about. The stuff that Tony D said to him was that. It was largely cribbed. Kelly Kincaid talked to Carmelo Hayes. This is when he said that he got his four guys. He said, they're going to protect me by any means necessary, by which he meant the means is to put them all in the exact same spot and have them look in the worst place possible.
They did catch him on a spot during the match, I guess.
That's true. They did their part one time. Gosh, imagine if they had dropped him. The only thing they could have helped with, they screwed up. Briggs and Jensen, they had a scene. Obafemi is going to face Brooks Jensen next week, and Josh Briggs asked if that was such a good idea. So Briggs said he eventually made peace with it and said, all right, go get him, brother. And then he walks off and Dijak shows up and said, you called him brother, but you know that's a lie. I'm cribbing that because I don't know exactly what he said, but it was very close to that. We know that Dijak and Josh Briggs will probably happen soon. So that should be a very meaty match. I think maybe we've already seen it before. We saw them going at it during the Iron Survivor Challenge. I can't remember if we saw a singles match.
But I'm here for it.
Familiar. Yeah. Yeah. I think that could be quite enjoyable and perhaps even enough for Stand and Deliver, even though that's it's a small card and it's one you want to be very, very big. But Dijak's been winning a lot and Briggs does seem like a genuine priority. So they got that. And for his part, I'm really happy that Jensen's making it work. I really am. Kelly Kincaid, I always just want to say KK because that's what I write down. And Ilya talked as well, but Stax and Luca showed up and had some words for Ilya. So in case you hadn't figured out that Tony D was winning this, it's kind of obvious. Ava and Gigi had a scene later on. Ava said that Ariana Grace was ducking her and she can't force her into a match. Ariana showed up and said she has not reconsidered, but then she finally agrees to a match with Gigi Dolan under the condition that if she wins, she gets to show Gigi Dolan how to be more of a lady. What was the other part? Oh, and how to be less vulgar because Gigi said she was, or to have less of a potty mouth is what she said. Because Gigi did say that she wanted to kick her ass.
That's not pageant language, Kelly.
Yes, it's true. This could be a really enjoyable odd pairing. They tried to do something with Tiffany and Fallon. It was okay. I think this can be better just because in that context, I think Ariana Grace could be that funny. I guess we will find out because there's no reason to do that match if Gigi's going to win. Meta 3, because Jakara was not there. Noam Dar, he's not sad anymore. So I didn't know how they were going to take him away from the whole Heritage Cup situation, but they just had him pop up and say he's ready for something more. And then finally, Mr. Stone and Von Wagner had your guaranteed segment of the final quarter hour or so. And Mr. Stone wants to face Lexus King one-on-one because he took swipes at his family. And Von Wagner said he'd have his back, but Stone said this is something he has to do himself. So Lexus King doesn't get to win very much anymore, but he is looking at a match with Mr. Stone. Bruce?
I'll start at the beginning with the, oh, wow, now I just lost what that first segment was. Not the Christofino one. We don't have to talk about that, but it was the...
Mellow Enemies Necessary, and then Briggs and Jensen.
Briggs and Jensen is really what I wanted to talk about. I don't know. I had my comments, and all of a sudden I just lost it. So, like you said, Jensen is making it work. He's showing a lot more fire and personality in these last two or three weeks than he did in the first, 2 years he was in NXT. So, good for him. He basically said, look, you told me to grow some balls. Here I am, Steph. I might lose, but I'm going at it, and I'm gonna have the confidence that I will be the next North American champion. Good for him. He's not going to, of course, as Open Femi, but good for him for having that confidence. Good for him for trying, right? Briggs, he's the concerned friend, and I get that, and he's one of those friends who understands the abilities and limitations of his friend as well, and is concerned because he also knows the potential and limitations of their whatever they might be for Oba Femi. So I get that he's caring, but Dijak is needling him with you lying straight to his face and calling him brother. Okay, I'm looking forward to this feud, whatever it might be. This is going to be some big meaty men slapping meat. This is going to be one of your strong style matches. We're going to just go at it, and I'm going to be all for it. And I keep saying this. I think this feud, whatever the culminator is, right, because I think this might go a couple matches, I think that will be a great time to establish the managerial connection of Briggs and JBL. The only other time I think you should bring that in is if they do another feud with Jensen, if Jensen builds himself back up at some point. But I think I just feel like to get Briggs to that next level, because they obviously are putting stuff behind him. And I'm not saying that Briggs is doing a bad job. I think he's doing great. But I think to get to the next level, having him paired with, we always say this, we hate saying it about JBL, but someone who is such a natural on the mic and as a character, I think would just really help elevate him even more quickly than they kind of anticipate with how much they're pushing him right now. So to me, that is what they should be doing next is, okay, Briggs, I think we just talked about Dijak always losing, but Briggs needs to win this feud with Dijak. And from there, I think you need to have him paired with JBL. Since we're on the subject of Dijak, I think one thing that's conspicuous to me by their absence is the person that had been feuding with Dijak is what happened to Eddie Thorpe. But, okay, that when we look at the what was the other segment that I just – oh, Metaphor. So, to me, Meta 3. One thing I was confused about, but I'm kind of glad they're dangling. One, how did Noam Dar decide so quickly to just get over it and move on? And then two, when he says the bigger and better things, what is he specifically discussing? Is it going to be a tag team championship for him and Mensa? Is it going to be Lash or Jakara going after the women's championship? Is it going to be Dar going after the North American championship, the men's NXT championship? I want to see what they mean by bigger and better. I want to see something definitive, but I like the fact that they're dangling that out there for us, because it makes me want to see what they do next, because they've been so integral to NXT in the past, ever since the summertime, really. And so seeing what comes next for them and how they transition out of being just so intricately tied to the Heritage Cup is one of the stories I'm most looking forward to unfolding here over the next, I guess, until Stand and Deliver. I'm assuming that's where he's going to, or Metaphor, whatever they're doing will culminate. When we look at Stone, Wagner, this is the benefit of having someone like Stone who was an in-ring competitor and still is in shape enough and can do the in-ring things and can take bumps. Where when we do see him in a match, it's because it's some sort of blood feud, right? The first time it was Breaker and Vaughn, and he was stepping up for his man Vaughn, and he got his one punch in, right? It was all about getting that one punch in. He got it, and then he got his ass demolished, right? Here, it's because of the fact that King has been going after his family, and specifically his kids, and, you know, I don't have a kid, a human kid at least, but I'm sure that if people went after your kids, Kel, you would have a similar reaction, right? So I get that, and I do like the fact that when he does step into the ring, it's not just because, oh, it's, you know, the early Mr. Stone character was more played for comedy, especially when it came to the in-ring things. And when he did get into it, it was more kind of frivolous. I like how they made that transition to where he's more of a serious manager, even if, you know, he's managing Von Wagner. Whatever. So I guess overall, to me, we know that Stone is going to lose. But what is it going to say about Lexus King that his biggest victory in NXT arguably will be against Mr. Stone?
Yeah, and I guess with that, we'll fizzle out, folks, because that's the only proper response to that. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Bruce?
Hi, I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee, and sorry to make everybody fizzle out, but I'll just go back to playing CK24. Have a good night, everybody.
All right, folks, we will see you in 7. Cheers. Cool.
Yeah.
One email and no callers. That made it easy.
Yeah, no Nate.
Right. Next week there's no me, so he tries to, like, he makes no attempt to keep it short. So so as I'm in Dallas, I look forward to getting back to my room at midnight and then seeing that there's a 3-hour thing to listen to.
Excuse me. Well, do you still have to do, no, of course you do. Sorry, they're opening a package, and I thought that, I don't know if you heard earlier all the squeaks, but that was Amaru just playing with his toy.
I did, and I figured that was, it was something like that.
Vanessa came home, and whenever one of us gets home, he gets really excited, and then he'll just grab a toy and start going at it, and this time it was a squeaky toy, unfortunately, but.
Yeah, my daughter started singing while you were doing your second to last, like right before I signed off. And I thought when I turned it on to sign off that you'd hear it, but I hadn't talked for a minute. So she went out to the common area upstairs and just started singing. And I thought that would be like bonus guest. and it would have been a bonus because she's literally Allstate. Like she goes to a school of 4,000 people and she was one of the 6 people who was Allstate singer. So she's real, real good. So yeah, but that did not happen. I didn't even get to hear what she was singing because it was just faint enough and I have my headphones on.
Everything okay with the neighbors, your wife, all that?
It's a damn fine question. I mean, everything's like everything's okay with my wife and daughters, and that's what matters to me most.
Yeah.
I hope nothing happened to my very young neighbor. She's like in such a crummy living situation. I don't know. Did I tell you this? Where I had not seen, I knew, Kathy doesn't know why this happens. So we have a neighbor. He's an older guy who lives alone. He's probably about 60. And he's been there for a long time. He was neighbors with my mom when she lived in this place, like before we bought it from them all these years ago. And I think the whole time they lived here. But this woman came up from, I think, Texas with her daughter, who's like 10, and the woman's like 40. And we don't think there's like, we don't think they're related. Like we think it might be like a mail order kind of thing. Like we don't know exactly. But she's up here and I'm never outside at the same time as the woman. So I didn't know anything about her. And so 2 months ago, I'm staying at my brother's house. And in the morning, my wife calls me and goes, the craziest thing happened last night. The craziest. At 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning, she suddenly hears screaming. And she was like, it sounds close. And she realized it was in our kitchen.
Oh.
And she went downstairs, and the lady that lives next door was in our kitchen screaming.
Oh, God.
She had scaled our garage door and climbed over the, like this little barricade there, for our, where our deck is. And that door was unlocked.
Oh, God.
And she came in and she was screaming. And Kathy's like, what? She goes, someone's in my house. She's trying to kill me and my daughter and Steve. And she's like screaming. She's losing her mind. She's, Kathy says she's never seen somebody this scared. She's like shaking, convulsing, like somebody's trying to kill her. And so Kathy calls the police. My daughter's there, but she just like closes and locks her door. And then, so Kathy's like, I didn't approach her because I had no idea what was going on, really.
Yeah.
So I just kind of stayed away from her. I could see her, but like, you know, I stayed away from her. And the police come, they talk to her, they ask like, are you doing drugs or anything like that? She's like, no, I don't do drugs at all. And they said, okay, well, let's go check on everybody. And they come back. She's like, and they're like, okay, well, miss, there's no one there. It's just Steve and your daughter, and they're fine. And they start asking questions about the drugs again. She's like, no. And she goes, oh God, did I hallucinate again?
Oh no.
And they're like, what? And she said she hallucinated something very similar a few months ago or something like that. And Kathy's telling me about all this. She's like, and yeah, I guess apparently she doesn't do drugs at all. And I'm like, it sounds like maybe she does. But I don't know because I've never met her. And so, yeah, she goes back there and everybody's talking like, you need to have this figured out, have this looked at. And Kathy ended up running into Steve the next day. Steve said, yeah, she told me that this happened and I'm sorry and everything. And he was really taciturn about it. Like he was nice about it because he always is, but he was just like, didn't seem like a big deal. And I said to Kathy, like, well, maybe she didn't tell him everything because this was a pretty big deal. And she talks to him again. And then this time makes sure to bring up all of the stuff that happened. And he goes, yeah, she didn't tell me any of that shit. She did not tell me about the hallucination. She did not tell me she was screaming in there.
Oh, gosh.
None of this. And she,
I can understand
she,
from perspective why she wouldn't want to. But,
yeah. And she, yeah, like she hasn't told him anything, hasn't looked for any kind of help, anything like that. And I'm like, that's no good. And I started referring to her as the meth head because I was like, she probably is. And then I still didn't see her for like another month, 2 months. Maybe this happened like 3 months ago. But I finally saw her. She's like coming away from her car and I'm going to mine. And she just kind of passes and smiles quickly. And I think she tries to have very quick relations with us now because she knows we know. And dude, she's a meth head. Like it's all over it. Like anyone who is savvy at all, who's been around drugs at all, knows that not only is she on drugs, but she is on meth. Like that is what she did to herself. And even in the case that she's not on it anymore, that is the drug that was her drug of choice. It is all over her face. About 2 weeks ago, I was doing laundry and I did not know that the walls were so thin in the laundry room, but I heard her daughter screaming from the laundry room. They must've been in just the adjoining laundry room or the basement, but apparently you can hear really well in there. which I did not realize, but heard her screaming. I was like, that kid seems really sweet. So she hurts her, I'm going to be fucking livid. So when Mari said she heard this scream, I was like, it's probably that little kid. But then when Mari was explaining where she heard it from, I was like, well, doesn't make any sense for it to be that kid more than anybody else. But I didn't get to really ask Mari about it because I was doing my recap at the time and Kathy went upstairs to deal with it. And Mari gets freaked out pretty easily. So she might have been overreacting. But at any rate, hearing a scream in a really quiet residential area, I mean, it stands out because, like, we don't hear anything. If I was 200 yards east, you would hear the road constantly every time I talked. It would never stop. But I'm just far enough away from it that you never hear it. There's nobody who drives by my house ever. In fact, we're at the end of the cul-de-sac. There's nobody past us. So, like, literally no car goes by except mine. Yeah, it was, so when that stuff started happening today, I thought maybe that was what was going on. And hopefully it's not.
Well, go ahead.
I live in a really nice area. I did not live here so I could live next to a meth head. And then Steve and fucking meth head to his house.
Well, are you planning to get 2K24?
To what's that?
Are you planning to get WWE 2K24?
Probably not. I don't do wrestling games all that often anymore.
Set Fire Pro.
Yeah.
Well, if you want a challenge, their trophy list this year is fucking ridiculous. Lots of things on Legend difficulty. Yeah, it's not going to be as easy as it has in the last 2 years. It's going to be a pain in the ass. So, trying to figure out if I want to pour that time into it or not.
Yeah. I'm 18 trophies away from 5,000, so I got to decide which game is cool enough to be my 5,000.
5,000 total or 5,000
platinums? 5,000 total trophies. 5,000 platinums would be madness.
I'm at 41 trophies right now, 53 platinums, so I'm getting there.
Oh, wow. You do a lot of completion. I've got 34 platinums, which is a lot. I've only got one, well, I guess two friends on there that have more than I do. But the other one's got like 9,000 trophies total. Like every time I'll go through a month where I play a shitload and I'm like, yeah, I'm chipping away at Scott, and I'll look and he'll be a little bit more ahead of me than he was at the beginning of the month. I'm like, this was my biggest month. I can't do more than this.
Oh shit. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks, Kelly. Have a good night. Hope everything's fine for you and your family. So,
yeah. Not looking forward to the news.
No.
All right.
All right. Have a good night.
Yeah.